the return of the NASA team. We want to welcome you to Parliament. I know this is your second home. Quite a lot, and also to the honourable members. I hope you had a very successful weekend, and we want to welcome you also to back to Parliament so that the work can start. Thank you, NERSA, for honouring the invitation of addressing the Select Committee on Economic Development, which also oversees energy and mineral resources, as we are a cluster. We're going to start with the introductions, and we're going to carry on and give over to NERSA to introduce themselves and also to do the presentation for us. My name is Freddie Adams. I'm the chairperson of the Economic Development Committee, Select Committee on Economic Development. I'm the permanent delegate from the Western Cape, and I'll start with the honourable gentleman with the start time.
That's me, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. My name is Alf Leeds, KZN delegate to this committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and other members present. I'm Elza van Lingen from the Eastern Cape. Good morning, everyone. My name is
Good morning. I'm Tumsani Kamete from Wakuzumata.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Honourable chairperson, Kuswayo from NERSA, welcome to you and your team. You can start the introduction.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. On my left, I have Munda Mkwena, who is the chief executive at NERSA. And on my right, I have Ms. Nomalanga Tole. She's an executive manager, corporate services. And next to Mr. Mkwena, there is Mr. Mbatezo, Mbulelu Mbatezo. He's executive manager, electricity. And for the far end, we have Uzetu, who is a manager in the CEO's office, and she does all the CEO duties. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bande.
I'm from PMG, Chilesha.
Hello, what's your name?
Chilesha.
Yeah. I'm Joe Williams, a journalist from Soccer 24.
I'm Thabo Mkonde from SABC News.
I'm Hilton Trollope from EDASA Economic Development.
I'm Drew McLaughlin, Health Communications, Ham Cham, and NJ and Shell.
I'm Drew McLaughlin, I'm Climate Communication. I'm Drew McLaughlin.
Wonderful. Now we know who's everybody in the room. So tomorrow we can't argue and say no, but you were not there, or I'm taken out of context, or no, this guy does not know what he's talking about, or that one does not know what they're talking about. Then we can put the name by the face and say no, but SBC has reported right, or South Power, or anything, anybody. Welcome everybody, the media, and everybody, Sauga, PNG, Engine, everybody, welcome. Feel at home, feel free, relax. Don't be tense and stressed about it. If you are stressed, we've got a good person that can take care of that stress, Honorable Van Lingen. She's quite good with that, to take care of people's stress and take the stress off your mind, anything. So relax, NERSA, relax. We'll engage each other. If the engagement is robust in that, we will do that. But also to every everybody in this room, we will do everything in an orderly and good we'll conduct ourselves very goodly. So don't worry, just relax. We've been joined by two more persons. Can we get your names? The ID numbers we'll take later on, and from where you are.
Shakil Mir from the Industrial Development Corporation.
Berintia Santona, also from the Industrial Development Corporation.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I think you have instructed the CEO to take us through the presentation, but if there's any remark that you want to make, the chance is now or after the presentation, or must she shoot, or what? It's your call now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll allow the CEO to get straight into the matter.
Thank you very much, Chair. The Chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic Development, I feel very relaxed, especially when you say this is a our second home. I'd like to characterize it as a third home because it's very rare that we come and address the Select Committee. Yes, the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, they normally call us more often. Chair, just by way of introduction, ordinarily I would not be doing this presentation. My colleague, Mr. Tembani Bukula, who is the regulator member primarily responsible for electricity regulation at NERSA, is currently traveling abroad with on NERSA business. As you are aware, the National Energy Regulator is established in terms of the National Energy Regulator Act and consists of 9 members, 5 of whom are part-time and 4 are full-time, consisting of the CEO, yes, truly, and the full-time member primarily responsible for electricity regulation, Mr. Tembani Mukula, who's traveling abroad, Mr. Dr. Crompton, who is responsible for petroleum pipelines regulation, and Ms. Ethel Tellio, who is responsible for pipe gas regulation. Chair, once again, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. It is indeed an honor for us to give you an overview of the energy, the renewable energy feed-in tariffs that have been introduced by NERSA to encourage investment in renewable energy generation in order to achieve the renewable energy target. In terms of my presentation outline, we will give you an overview of the mandate that's relevant here, the current structure of the electricity supply industry, the objects of the Electricity Act that are relevant, the relevant extract of the white paper on renewable energy, and the refit, and of course the facilitators which will enable us to implement the renewable energy policy, and of course conclude. Chair, NERSA derives its mandate from the following laws. The National Energy Regulator was established in 2005 in terms of the National Energy Regulator Act. NERSA is the successor of the National Electricity Regulator that regulated the electricity supply industry since 1995. The Act extended NERSA's regulatory mandate to pipe gas and petroleum pipelines. However, today's topic is limited to the electricity supply industry and indeed to renewable energy. NERSA's mandate is also outlined in the Electricity Regulation Act. NERSA is also empowered by this Act to make rules, and thus the refits were formulated under this mandate. In particular, Section 4A, sub 4, Roman 4, the regulator is mandated to issue rules designed to implement the national government's electricity policy framework, the Integrated Resource Plan, and this Act, close quote. Here we're trying to characterize the overview of the electricity supply industry. As you can see, in the middle, the top three blocks, Eskom Generation, Eskom Transmission, Eskom Distribution is a vertically integrated utility, owning more than 90% of generation. The entire transmission network in the country is 100% owned by Eskom. The distribution is split in terms of volumes, you could say 60%, and the other distribution in terms of volumes is the municipalities, but in terms of customer numbers, the municipality has got 60% of the customer numbers. As you can see, if IPPs come into play, we'll feed both into the grid or to the large power users or to the distributors themselves, and of course the customers at the end. Eskom does supply directly to major suppliers such as the smelters and mines. There are a few IPPs. One can only give an example of Kelvin and City Power, which supply City Power, and SAPI, which also supply Eskom. The objects of the Electricity Regulation Act are listed in Section 2 of the Act, and the relevant ones of this, to this presentation are to facilitate investment in the electricity supply industry, to promote the use of diverse energy sources and energy efficiency. There are other objects, but we feel that these are more relevant to the discussions at hand. These two objects are relevant because the introduction of RIFs with premium in prices encourages investors to develop RIFs projects. RIFs also encourage the introduction of different technologies in the generation mix, such as wind and solar technologies, over and above the conventional coal-based thermal generation. I think it's only fair to comment that the most proven technologies in terms of base load production of generation of energy is of coal-fired power stations and the nuclear generators. The Renewable Energy White Paper of 2005 states that in order to meet the long-term goal of sustainable renewable energy industry, government has set the following 10-year target for renewable energy: 10,000 gigawatt hour or 0.8 million tons of equivalent all renewable energy contribution to final energy consumption by 2030, to be produced mainly from biomass, wind, solar and small-scale hydro. The renewable energy is to be utilized for power generation and non-electric technologies such as solar water heating and power fuels. This is approximately 4%, 1,667 megawatt of the estimated electricity demand of 42,000 megawatt by 2013. Based on the above requirements, namely the objects of the Act and the Renewable Energy White Paper target, NERSA introduced a RIFIT framework in two phases. A RIFIT is a pre-approved tariff for a specific renewable energy generation technology, such as, for example, wind. The tariff is derived from the cost of providing and operating the technology. By nature, the RIFIT includes a premium above the tariffs required to sustain conventional generation. The premium is required to attract investors and developers of renewable energy technology. I think it's important to characterize the financial assumptions that were used in determining the RIFIT. First of all, the debt-equity ratio of 70-30. With a 14.9% cost of debt and 8% inflation assumed, the real after-tax cost of debt of 6.39 was also used. The real return on equity after-tax of 17%. The overall result is a weighted average cost of 12%. Now, in March 2009, NERSA published phase one of the RIFIT with qualifying renewable energy technologies. The technologies are largely aligned with those listed in the Renewable Energy White Paper of 2003. They were the concentrated solar power, cloud technology with 6-hour storage with a tariff of 2 rand 10 cents per unit, wind 1 rand 25 cents per unit, small hydro generation of less or equal to 10,000 megawatt in size with a tariff of 94 cents per unit, landfill gas at 90 cents per unit. It's important to realize that Eskom's average price of electricity is currently 41 cents per unit, which is less than 50% of the lowest REFIT. This is the indication of the extent of the premium at which REFITs will be introduced. The premium is aimed at attracting private investors and developers into the power generation sector. Phase 2 of REFIT introduced 5 more renewable energy technologies, namely concentrated solar power without storage at 3 rand, 14 cents per unit, large-scale grid-connected photovoltaics at 3 rand, 94, which is about the most expensive in terms of the unit of production, biomass solids at 118 cents per unit, biogas at 96 cents per unit. Concentrated solar power using a tower with a 6-hour storage at 2 rand 31 cents per unit. Note that the phase 1 CSP with storage used a solar trough, and my colleague will show the difference between the trough and the tower between the two CSPs. The important features that need to be noted with regard to the REFIT is that the REFIT will be escalated by CPI annually. A full tariff review will take place every year for the first 5-year period of implementation and every 3 years thereafter. The term of the power purchase agreement, PPA, is 20 years. The carbon revenue from the clean development mechanism was not included in the REFIT. Independent power producers, IPP, may apply for CDM revenues separately. The new generation regulations of 5th August 2009 require that NERSA issues rules on selection criteria for the REFIT program. NERSA is currently finalizing the rules and the standard REFIT PPA after a lengthy public consultation process. Once the rules are finalized, they will be forwarded to the systems operator or the buyer. The buyer will then kickstart the process by issuing request for qualification and a request for proposal. Now I'd like to touch on some of the elements that will facilitate or enable this process to move forward for the introduction of the renewable energy. Regulation 10 of the new generation regulations require that NERSA passes rules for the purpose of cost recovery by the system operator and the buyer. In response to this, NERSA gazetted rules on power purchase cost recovery after a public consultation process. The cost recovery mechanism basically addresses the following: whether the proposed IPP will be affordable, the allocation of risk between the buyer and the IPP, process to be followed by the buyer in seeking approval of pass-through costs, a list of recoverable or pass-through costs. On 29 January 2010, the DOE gazetted the Integrated Resource Plan 1. From the plan, under the REFIT wind and REFIT other columns, at least 200 megawatts of wind have been allowed and 625 megawatts of other technologies. CIRA, which is 100 megawatts, is the wind farm that was supposed to be built by Eskom. Apologies for a very big slide, but if you look at column 7 to 8, starting from your left, I'm talking to the issue of REFIT wind, REFIT other technologies, which would amount by 2013, 625 megawatts, and of course the CIRA wind farm that is included in the current Eskom's determination that we've just concluded. These allocations to renewable energy will probably be increased in the IRP2, which is currently under development under the leadership of DOE. you'd recall that on the 24th of February 2010, the energy regulator announced its decision on Eskom's allowed revenues for 2010 to 2013, that is MYPD2. The second line shows that what was allowed for purchases from IPPs, namely 2.3 billion in the first year, 4.2 billion in the second year, and 5.8 billion in the third year, which is a total of about 12.4 billion in the control period of 3 years. This should allay concerns from prospective investors and developers that Eskom may not be in a position to pay for the energy purchases. In conclusion, Chair, the energy regulator believes that all perceived regulatory risk have been mitigated and are being mitigated once these processes, such as the selection criteria for the refit program, have been finalized. The buyer will be in a position to invite interested parties to bid before the end of 2010. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, CEO. Mr. McQuinn, Jefferson, or anybody that wants to add on to the presentation?
I wanted to show that based on two slides.
Okay, this is the CSP tower, that is a concentrated solar power tower. As you can see, there is the tower. This is the tower, and down here you've got all the mirrors that are concentrating the sun to the tower on top there, and that is the liquid that is going to be heated up to create generation, that is to drive the generator. So that is the CSP tower. And the next one is the trough. This is the trough. These are the mirrors here, all around here. And they are concentrating the sun rays onto this bar here. And that bar contains the fluid that will be used for generation. So when we're talking about CSP trough, this is what we're talking about. So that's the difference between the two technologies.
Any other additions? No. Members, we thank you, Mr. McQuinn, for the presentation, and Chairperson, also thank you very much, as well as your other staff members. I know that I know we've asked NERSA to come and give us a briefing on refit, but. Let me guarantee you that one or two of the members will ask you other questions as well, so be prepared. ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, over to you. Honorable Mkuni, Honorable Sinclair, Honorable Lees, Honorable Kamere. Take that first round then.
Honorable Mfuni. Thank you, Chair. I've got just one technical question. I'm just interested to know how does the concentrated solar power, when it heats the fluid, how does the fluid in turn generate electricity? Plus my second question will be, what do you expect from infinite producers? Are they also going to use the same tariffs, or are they going to have a leeway to set their own tariffs, seeing that the technical production of electricity might be a bit expensive, or especially solar, because of the solar power? What's the view from this?
terms of the various technologies, I see that the tariffs have already been brought out for the one space that's been specified, but there's also some other technology, for instance, wave and tidal energy. Is NASA in the process of developing a refit modeling scheme for others, like, for instance, wave and tidal energy that's not reflected here? Yeah, and then, Chairperson, you know, some of the specialists on these fields refer to our only electricity provider at the moment, Eskom, as the big brother or the monster in this industry. Now, we know the difficulties that we're sitting with Eskom, everything that it entails, but I see there's a reflection in the presentation to the buyer. Now, who's this buyer? Is this now our big brother, or is it some of the other brothers? Because I think the very noble objective of this whole process is to get a more even spread in terms of electricity provision in the country. Then the other issue that I want to raise is the issue about affordability. Now, a lot there's many references to the the IPPs and the return on the investment and so on. But certainly, Mr. Chairperson, given the capital investment that's needed, for instance, that's been shown, the wind, the other technology and so on, there's a lot of capital that needs to make it worthwhile and so on. Now, I see they speak about 14%, if I'm right, return on capital investment. Or 12%, average cost of capital, 12%. Now, at that rate, I don't think it would be so lucrative for people that got the capital to come in. The question that I want to raise is that the return on the investment and the effort and so on, is it really worthwhile? Or mustn't government and NASA look at the process of making it more attractive? Thank you, Chairperson.
Jim, may I start on slide 4, the flowchart which indicates where the IPPs, or the independent power producers, sit in. Could I please be told why there is no line connecting IPPs directly to customers? Is that an omission, or are they required to supply via the existing distribution network? And why does the line from IPPs go to Eskom transmission when a lot of the IPPs will be producing power at relatively low voltages, which won't be, you cannot accommodate in the Eskom transmission system, which transmits at very, very high voltages? Why does there are no line to the Eskom distribution? Are we trying to eliminate small, very small producers from the system? I'm curious, in terms of the CSP, why the tariff is lower without storage than with storage. I mean, I would have thought that the storage is quite a big capital investment. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's certainly not a whole lot of car batteries. I'm not sure what kind of storage we're talking about. But why is the tariff lower if you're going to invest in storage than if you don't invest in storage? I would have thought it one should encourage storage so that there's a source of power when the sun's not shining. The question of a power purchase agreement lasting over a 20-year period, I'm a bit lost there, so please forgive me if I've misunderstood it, but are we saying that any agreements can only be 20 years, they cannot be less? In terms, it's on slide 11, the power purchase agreement is 20 years. I just need an explanation of what that is. And these pass-through costs, are we saying that if I as a consumer purchase power, electricity, from an IPP, right now I can't claim that as a tax deduction, as an expense? Is that what it says? I mean, why is there a need to somehow regularize these things as pass-through costs? I need a bit of an explanation on what that really means. Then there's the question of kind of subsidiary industry and power generation. For instance, the Dunlop factory in Ladysmith produces large amounts of steam, which they use for curing tyres. Now, the steam blows off those presses all day, every day. And there's been an initiative to use that steam and generate power with it. Now, where does that fit into here, into your tariff structure? Then there's a steam generation plant at Carbachem, outside Carbachem in Newcastle. They produce steam for Carbachem, an independent company. They have excess steam generation capacity, and they want to use it to generate electricity. Would they fit into the scheme? Because they're not a renewable. They're using, I think they're using oil at the moment for their steam generation. So they're certainly not the kind of the generation that you're looking at here in terms of green and so on, or renewable. But would they be able to, in terms of these regulations, generate steam and supply Carbachem with electricity as well as steam? In terms of your IRP1 slide, those capacities, megawatt capacities, are they cumulative? I seem to gather that. So if you go down the line 2009 to 2013, we're saying that at the end, by 2013, for instance, the refit other, which you said 625 megawatts. Is that correct? So it's cumulative. The figures are not in themselves cumulative, they are additional capacity year on year. Mr. Chairman, if I can leave it at that. Honourable Gaveda.
Thanks, I'm sure I'll add my voice on what Honourable Lee is saying on page 4. The IPP seems to me the priority would be the large power users, the smelters. It seems to me the smelters and all those big consumers, that is business, and those are people who talk about the bottom line and so on. Whereas this comes from NERSA, you know, NERSA being established and formed by government to meet certain demands and certain, you know, priorities. Now the question would be, why? You know, if you look at it the other way around, by the time consumers get this energy, it could go to the municipal generators, the local authority distributors, and then that layer would be the consumers. Now, why and at what cost to the consumer? Because I believe as a necessity, the consumers are to be cautioned in one way or the other. Secondly, taking this presentation just down to the earth and down to the ground, as someone from KwaZulu-Natal, what would this mean to the ordinary person? Will there be a change in life, or will it mainly concentrate, I'll be direct, to urban areas and to big business? what will this mean to rural people? And thirdly, when are we likely to finalize the rules on the selection criteria? Because I think it's open-ended. What time frame? Just say on this month, we suppose, so that then the process moves on. And also, where are we now on renewable energy as we speak today? Maybe even not in this meeting. Is there something concrete because of the deadline, of the 2030? Can you say in KwaZulu-Natal, this is where we are on renewable energy in Limpopo and with all other points? Because we have this 2013 that is, you know, hanging around our head. I'm sure this 2013 comes from 2003 that it, the government gave itself 10 years. So how far has it moved? If we were to get percentage-wise, we said now, percentage-wise, because this will also assist us in the Millennium Development Goal in one way or the other, that we do have some form of energy or electricity. The last one would be almost the same about Eskom transmission and distribution and IPPs. Why the thinking was rather give the transmission from the IPPs to the transmission, why not the distribution? Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Kamere. Chairperson, will you dispatch your team to answer the first round?
Chair, let me perhaps try to characterize the electricity supply industry and perhaps point out certain programs that we are licensing as an energy regulator, because our work includes licensing. No entity can produce, transmit, and distribute electricity without a license from NERSA. So the character of the industry is such that, as I indicated, that by and large, our base load generation comes from thermal coal fired power stations, because they provide for a stable base load supply. And of course, the nuclear in terms of Uber. And then from there, then to manage your demand, your peaking, then you've got your peaking plants, such as Ankerlech, Horigua, but those are fueled by other methods of primary energy, which is either diesel or kerosene or something like that, which is dependent on the price of oil. So from that perspective, you would see the IPPs coming into that space. Anybody who sets up a generation plant, you would set up a generation plant where you can relatively easy to source the primary energy. If you source your primary energy is your coal, obviously you'll put next to your coal fire station. So those are the things that you consider. Coal and water, because they are used for cooling. So having said that, then you've got generators or companies that can build their own generators, such as Sasol, Sapi. So those also, they supply themselves and they can supply directly to the customers. But they supply through a system. We must recall that anything above 132 kilovolts is characterized as transmission. So to transmit electricity tells you that you must treat at relatively high voltages, otherwise you have a very high losses on the line. So it's very important that when one looks at IPPs, the reason it's sitting like that, that the transmission, the access by IPPs to the transmission and to large customers is simply because large customers, by their very nature, they can access electricity at very high voltages. The average voltage that we use at our houses, like in here, it's only 220 volts. So it has to be, that is why you don't have a direct line to customers. The other issue that I'd like to mention with regard to the issue of cogeneration, what you are referring, Honorable Lee, is that there are plants that we, activities that we license, whereby any unwanted waste, but which can be used to generate electricity, like bagasse or like steam, as you rightly said, that you can use to generate electricity for your own use. But that is also a problem that's going to come as and when the electricity prices becomes attractive to produce those. Because the price of electricity is at the moment at 41 cents per kilowatt hour. The cogeneration cost must be slightly higher. So once companies begin to see that the price of cogeneration is better than that of the ESCOM, then they would be encouraged to generate, and it would become cheaper. But I think to answer questions per se, and maybe the other question that we need to answer in generic terms, under normal circumstances, your steam drives a turbine. So almost everything has to be driven by a turbine, and the turbine drives the generator. So what do those trucks do? They heat something that will then become steam, and then that steam is blown through the turbine. The turbine drives the generator. So that's a simplified description of how power is generated. But to having said that, we'll go to the questions one by one. The issue of, and my colleagues will assist in terms of this. I think the issue with the wave and tidal power, I think it must be realized that the technologies that we've opted for are technologies that have been proven commercially in South Africa. Tidal waves and wave technology and tidal maybe are proven elsewhere, but for now in South Africa, we're targeting those that can be commercially implemented. Now, the issue of the big brother, who is the buyer? I think there are processes in government to establish an independent systems operator, and once those processes have been legislated, an independent systems operator and a buyer will be established in terms of the legislation. But at the moment, the buyer resides and the system operator resides within ESCO. I think if you take ESCOM has got about 17 generators, if I'm sorry, that's very crudely, and the most expensive ones like Majuba, and the others that are relatively cheaper in terms of per kilowatt hour. So what you normally do, depending on the load, you start with the cheapest, you go to the most expensive. But your price that you get at the end is a blended price. So that is also envisaged in terms of cost recovery mechanism. You sitting there as an IPP, you'd be sitting, for argument's sake, 90 cents per kilowatt hour. But at the end of the line, the average customer would probably see 50 cents per kilowatt hour. Where did you get the other 40 cents to make up that 90 cents? So the cost recovery mechanism is to ensure that the independent power producer covers the cost of producing that electricity and sell it to the grid. You have to sell to the grid because you can't produce at a lower, like I said earlier on, you have to transmit power at higher voltages so that you reduce the losses in the line.
Yes, sir, I think you've answered the first one, the CSP, to how it does that. Because
the liquid that is in that tube, it's like your molten salt, and it can, the temperature can go up to 1,000 degrees. So if you take it through a heat exchanger and it heats the water, it changes it into steam that can drive a generator. The other technology is spoken to that not tried and tested yet. But what we do when we do this, we need a critical mass of projects out there so that we can know the average cost for that, and things like the load factor, all of those things. So that way, there's not much out there that we can use so that we can average things and say that typically for this kind of technology, these are the financial indicators for that. The affordability, the CAPEX return of 12%. As we say in this presentation, we went through a lengthy public consultation, and everybody agreed on that. There were investors, there were bankers there who agreed that that is, for now, fine, they can go with that. And they are looking at our doors right now every day to say, when are we starting? Because we'd like to get into this business. The tariff of the storage is lower for storage than for non-storage. The reason for that is that though you will have an extra capex when it comes to selling storage, when you've got storage, the load factor for a plant is going to be higher than without storage. So now if you take the lifespan of the plant, you'll find that the levelized cost will have to go down because you'll be dividing with a higher kilowatt hour output for the storage than for the non-storage. So the load factor of the non-storage is lower, meaning that the cost is going to be lower. The PPA is over 20 years. Yes, it can be less PPA, but when we went through this, we started with something like 15, and the industry said no, we'd like 20, because we need time for us to amortize the loans and everything. So we ended up with that 20, because that's what they said. And when we issued licenses with the regulator, the minimum period is 15 years. So we were like aligning that with that. But they said, no, in 15 years' time, we might not have amortized the loans. So we'd like it to be at least 20. But it doesn't mean that someone cannot get anything less than that. We do allow PPEs that are less than even 15 years. CarboChem, you mentioned CarboChem. CarboChem has got a license, not CarboChem itself, but ISPA. ISPA has got a license because they are co-generators. Here we're talking refits, but we've got a process that we are busy with now for co-generation. What you're talking about, that is using the steam, excess steam, and heat and everything like that, and waste products from the industry, that we call co-generation. And right now we're working on co-feed. That is co-generation feed-in tariff. And the paper is going to be going out very soon this year, out for public comment, so that we can deal with those situations where you've got industries that have got all these waste products, heat, whatever, that they can use to generate power. So we are on that, so that we can finalize it by the end of this year. Per year, that is what you see in a year is what is going to be installed that year. It's not cumulative. IPP is big business. I think I'm going to answer to that. The IPP, as you can see these tariffs here, if these IPPs can come into existence and they sell to people at 4 rand a unit, that will be too high. So we'd like these IPPs to actually sell to the bigger pool of ESCO, because there, when you blend the cost, then the customer at the end of the line gets the benefit of that blending. Because I think if it's sold directly, it will be very, very expensive. When I finalize the criteria, the regulator is very ready right now to finalize the criteria. But whilst we were trying to do that, the Department of Energy and the National Treasury, they came to us to tell us that there have been new developments on the policy side of the business, that we should hold on to that because they'd like to relook things. So we are waiting for that. We're supposed to have a meeting with them very soon to see whether we can't go ahead with this. But on our side, I think we've done what we could do. just that we've gone through the public process and we're ready now to make a pronouncement. But we're waiting now for any policy changes because we would like to finalize this, only to find that maybe after a month or so it gets changed. We would like to make the industry, you know, to be a little bit disturbed or unstable. So we'll wait for those two departments to come back to us to tell us exactly what it is that on the policy front that is the problem. Today, 2013, what is happening now with the refits? As we are saying, we're waiting on the criteria. And once the criteria are in place, then the buyer will now have to issue an RFQ. And then after the RFQ, they'll have to issue an RFP. That is a request for proposal. So once we're done on our side with the criteria, it'll be up to the buyer now to start the process, whoever the buyer is. But according to the new gender regulations, it says that the buyer is with any person or entity designated by the minister in terms of section 334(1)(c) and d of the Act, the Electricity Regulation Act, and authorized under license. So the minister has to determine who the buyer is according to these regulations. We cannot say right now. We know that right now we've got ESCOM who's been doing that because the system operators within ESCOM, but this is envisaging a new regime where the minister will have to determine who the buyer will be. So they, we still think, well, the department has to come to us and tell us exactly who the buyer will be. I don't know whether we... Yes.
Chair, let me just conclude by answering very briefly to three questions. The one of saying that are we eliminating or are we discriminating against the small producers? I think Ms. Metezo has answered it indirectly because if you were to sell directly to some of these, the power that you buy will be fairly expensive because it is blended price in the system and besides it's high voltages. The issue around what does it mean to the ordinary person in the street? I think, first of all, we need to be honest that as you've seen, the per unit cost of electricity from these renewable sources of energy is relatively expensive compared to what we are currently paying. Having said that, it is with good reason that renewable energies in the long term are going to be attractive in the sense that we're looking at issues of sustainability. Coal, uranium, and oil, and many other fossil fuels are, you know, they are finite. At some stage, they will come to, you know, to not. So there are other technologies that have to be looked at, such as the renewable energies. And in terms of the benefit to the ordinary person, the potential job creation possibilities in terms of some of these technologies will definitely have to be produced locally. Of course, there are certain technologies which would be produced where they are established, and it would be more expensive to produce them locally. But through the schemes and systems of government, there would be those requirements that would be put on investors to make sure that some of the major equipment is produced locally, like we are seeing now with ESCOM's construction of Modupi and Kosini. And in terms of cushioning the poor, I think, as you know, for the first time in the MYPD2, we introduced what we call inclining block tariff, which for households, so that the cost per unit is lesser if you consume less. For instance, if you consume so many kilowatt hours per month, below 300 kilowatt hours, below 600 kilowatt hours and above. So there are those schemes that have been put in place to cushion the poor. Yes, the electricity cost per unit is high, but in the long term, we believe that it will normalize. And of course, the volume, as you can see, we're only talking about 4% in 2013 if we achieve the 10,000 megawatt hour target.
I just wanted to add the fact that when you said, what did it do to the people of refugees in third of the prices. It's very, very expensive for them to get those. And there's no telescope and planet there. But the other thing that you can do for people is job creation. If you look at this picture here, you look at all these mirrors here, these have got to be clean all the time. So there will be people cleaning these, making sure that they're always shining. So there will be job opportunities for people once this is in place, whether this is 12 or the towers you see it here.
Mbulele, before you go on, in terms of the rural areas, can you just talk about, would solar be advantageous to rural people because of the sun most of the time, and what are the possibilities?
The solar would be, for rural people, I'd say PVs, that is photovoltaics. When you've got these solar panels on the roof, that would be very good for rural people. But then again, the cost for that of that is very prohibitive as we speak. But as they are rolled out more, we are sure that the price is going to come down. But in the long term, it would be very good for rural people because they wouldn't need to be connected to the grid, and they'll be able to have this free electricity, which is really not free in the beginning because the CapEx was very high.
Okay, honourable members, are there any follow-up questions around two? Honourable Guni, honourable Lees, honourable Gamere, honourable Sinclair, honourable Farmingham. Let me, before we start with the questions, let me just welcome one member, which we haven't welcomed, Honourable Dikhali. Welcome from Limpopo. You are welcome to the meeting. Honourable Mbuni?
Thanks, Chair. Chairperson, I don't know, perhaps I'm of the view that we're introducing IPPs and competition so that lower cost to at the end of the day to the ordinary members' rates for end users. Now, if you have agreed on WACC, with an average cost of capital of 12% on a grid, it means you are running out competition as such. Am I correct or perhaps am I wrong? At the end of the day, you know, you won't find the benefit of the competition. So they say once there's a monopoly, we're actually reducing 10% of employment. If there's competition, actually you produce the 10 more employment opportunities with this competition. I just want to understand whether by introducing IPPs, I can see that in your slide number, page 4, you've got multiple generators, you've got IPPs and ESCOM, which means that basically they could be 3 generators, but they all fit to, as you said, high voltage to a grid. They have to fit to a grid, which means they'll be forced to come to one tariff or to one, as you said, work of 12% of the work. My question is basically what about competition so that people they can get the benefit of the lower energies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, one understands the voltage losses and so on, but the distribution grid runs at, I think, 11 kVA. And so it could accommodate the smaller IPPs, I think. So that was my question, why it has to be at the very high voltages of the transmission grid. So, particularly when one's looking at renewable energy generation, where one's not able to generate at very high voltages, the transmission grid kind of voltages. My question really, and I didn't make it all that clear, let me take an example. If I install outside my home a vertical wind generator, which it seems to be the thing to do now, and to propellers are really not as efficient. And I generate electricity for my own consumption. But I want to feed into the grid, the network, the local municipal network. When I have excess capacity, I don't want to put a whole series of hugely expensive lead plate accumulators or some other storage capacity in. I don't see how that fits into your tariff structure. I'd be quite happy to feed in that 41 cents, quite honestly. If that's what I'm paying for it, I'll feed in at 41 and pay 41 when I need it. So the grid then becomes my storage for my own power. So that I don't see here, and it's something that we really do need to encourage, I think, because yes, the capex is quite high, but nevertheless, many of us believe that that's a responsible investment to make, and I'm seriously looking at it. I mean, I've looked at it, particularly when one's out in the rural areas, where your impact upon your neighbours may not be significant. I mean, if you put a big wind generator in Stanton, your neighbour might be a bit uptight with you, but where I live, that's not an issue. I don't see where that kind of generation and feed-in tariff fits into your structure. It's not a question of worrying about the cost or the cost recovery of the capex. Give us the room to decide for ourselves whether we want to invest this capital or not. Don't decide for us that you won't be able to pay for your capex, therefore you can't do it. Well, let us decide whether we want to invest in renewables as responsible South Africans. You see, that's what I was worrying about, and I didn't make that clear, I'm afraid. And it goes with the COVID thing. I mean, if I can't remember, you mentioned the name of the guys outside. If they really to generate and supply to Carbachem at 41 cents and not make a profit at this stage, why do we prevent them? Why do we have to go through this whole regime of setting up a tariff system before they can start? That's what I don't understand. I mean, is Dunlop want to put in generators and supply Zorbitex next door with electricity at 41 cents? Or Zorbitex might even pay a premium. Who knows? I mean, let them negotiate their own tariffs. Why can't they do it? License them. Give them a license. Tell them, go for it. You wouldn't generate it at loss. Carry on. Am I misreading this whole thing completely? I'm not very clued up with these tariffs. I'm afraid I'm an accountant and a part-time engineer from a long time ago. So please put me right. But do you understand what I'm trying to say? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Honourable Comrade.
Thanks, Chair. Because I'm a layperson, and forgive me, Chair. The presentation is scientific and technical, and we want to make it as simple as possible. I'm still on the IPP and the costs and the consumer. You know, in simple English, King and Joseph English, if you say the IPP when they sell to the large power users, it will be expensive. By implication, is that if from the IPP, if it goes to Eskom via the authority, it will be cheaper to the consumers. Unintended implications. So I just want to find the line, the difference in the line. If, for argument's sake, it is 80 rands to sell to the large power users, and you say it is expensive, comparatively speaking, how would it fare with the consumers if then they were to sell direct to the consumer? Would it be 80 rands? Or is it via Eskom, municipal generators, how much would it be? Would it be 25 rands, 35 rands? My ordinary arithmetic tells me it will be about 50, because it has gone by the number of stages. So that assists me with your mathematics and assists my arithmetic. Thanks.
Honorable Sinclair.
is to have 30% IPPs by when? 2013, 2014.
Well,
what is the objective?
We're not clear about the time, but we know about the 30% split.
Okay.
Going forward, that's what they said. Going forward is 30% IPPs, 70% ESCOM for new capacity.
Okay. So there's no exact time frame linked to that. So it might be the next millennium or whatever. But the reality is that if I look at the way forward, there on page 12. I foresee, and my assumption is that this whole process of the IPP and what we've heard here today, that there might be a policy change in government in terms of many issues, that that 30% is a pie in the sky. If I just look at the way forward, the official said that the new gen regulations of this require that NERSA issues the rules on selection criteria for the refit program. Officials indicate that the department has effectively stopped them because there's new selection criteria. So the first problem. The second one is in terms of this PPA. Okay, the 20 years is there and so on and so forth. But it can't just be about the 10, 20 years. There must be certainly other very serious issues in that power purchase agreement. So point two is also a problem. Then the third issue, the one about the operator or the buyer or what I call the big brother. It seems government is also in the process, the executive is also in the process of having a re-look about who's going to be the operator and the buyer and who's going to be the next ESCOM. And then, fourth point, once that has gone through, then it's the process of, as you put it there, to kickstart the process. Now, it seems that they literally will kickstart this process because it might be 5 years down the line. Jefferson, the point that I want to make is, it seems to me that despite all these very noble objectives, once again, because of over-regulation, the point that Honorable Lee's that we're not moving forward in terms of what we want to achieve. And that is a serious concern.
Mr. Chair, we were talking about the policy that must come out. And we started, somebody mentioned the selection criteria. But there's, when it comes to wind power, and I must tell you, we've got about six EIAs going in Kolkha municipality at the moment, near Humanstalk Jeffreys Bay, where people want to put up wind farms, and everybody is itching to put up a wind farm. And it's fine saying that the tariffs are now established, and that there must be some selection criteria and guidelines and so on, but where are we going from there? Is there going to be a site criteria in the policy? Are there going to be guidelines to say that, say, like in Europe, every 30 or every 50 kilometres you can have? Or is there I know that it involves the Department of Environmental Affairs, but where do we link up? Because we can't have a whole lot of wind farms around one little area, and everybody thinks that they can get electricity from a particular wind farm around the Kolkha municipality, and then they can't afford it because it's not going through ESCOM. How does the criteria work on the where do you place them? And then something that worries me a little bit is the direct line between the IPPs and the large power producers. The large power users. My question is, who is going to produce the power for the large power producers at what price? Because they are paying below cost at the moment when it comes to their prices from, well, that they're getting electricity from ESCO. you can help me out on that one. Thank you.
That's one issue. I know it might not be your competence, maybe, but just brief us on my duty. What's going to happen, you know, on moving forward? Something that we're going to see in future, my duty.
Okay. Yeah, with your permission, I just want to link on that question. Because I'm from the Northern Cape, you know, I've got an interest in the whole development at Upington and
Jersey. You have, you?
Sorry?
You have you?
What? I was going to remark about this honorable member that to solve all the energy issues, we must just have the nuclear plant at that Smith Punt, and then everything will be solved. But, no, on a serious point, Jefferson, the issue about the CSP at Upington, it seems that there's already some problems there in terms of the procurement of whatever equipment they're going to use. And I link it to the Honorable Gameri's question about the issue about Ntupi, because part of the requirement of the granting of the World Bank loan was the $600 million for the concentrated solar project in Upington. What is the status of that project?
Honorable Chairperson of NASA and CEO, you've got the floor.
Thank you, Chair. The question of small IDPs keeps coming back. No, we are not selling straight to the customer. I will try again to do simple math. Let's say you've got 1,000 and you add to that 1,000 1. It becomes 1,001. The increase of what you've added to the 1,000 is 0.00, is 1,000th, right? But if you add 1 to 1, it's going to be 2. So you've added 50%. Or 100%, you've increased what you had by 100% if you added 1 to 1, that was there. So the increase will be 100%. Whereas if you add 1 to 1,000, the increase will be 1,000th of that. That's what we mean. So if you sell to the pool, you'll be selling to the 1,000. You'll be selling 1 to the 1,000. And so the customer down there will see the blended cost increase. The incremental cost of that will be just 1,000th. Whereas if it's a small municipality, for instance, and we say, IPP go and sell to that Munich, we need to find that the Munich has got 1. You sell a 1, and then now you add a 1 from this guy who's selling it a high price. It's going to be even more than 100 now, because now the IPP is going to be coming at a higher price, at a premium price, if you're talking graphics, like we're doing here. So this is the principle we're talking about, that rather sell to the bigger pot and average it out. And it doesn't happen what you're saying, that is that there's going to be change now, that this one's going to be adding this and that. It's actually the opposite of what you're saying. That is that nobody's adding anything. Actually, everybody is like, you are being now cross-subsidized by the others. So it blends into that. So the increase is going to be very small to the customer. So it's a good thing to sell to the big pot than to the smaller pot. And then let's come to the IPP costs. Why to Eskom? There's another question by you. Again, I think that answered that question. That is that we sell to the bigger pool. And the 6 EIAs of wind in Kuka. Yes, there are many people who are coming to the regulator too, saying that they've got wind and they've got this, they're ready to go. We still have to see whether they'll be able to do that. As we're waiting for the criteria ourselves, once the criteria is in place, these people can come in anytime. And in the criteria, I don't know what talk about criteria that much, but in the criteria, we have criteria that say, if you are at a geographic position where your generation will support the network in terms of making it stable, then you will earn some points for doing so. So someone is going to be generating KZN and Kucha, Western Cape right here, far from where you normally get generation in South Africa. Those people will get points for that. So they'll be supporting the system by so doing. So in criteria, we have criteria that deal with that. That is geographically where you are and what is the contribution to the system. And IPPs to directed to LPUs, the large power users. This is what is happening today. There are mines that will have an IPP generating within the mine itself. Those are bilaterals. Those prices, here's something about the price. When those PPAs come to us as NERSA, we don't really look at the price that much, though we do regulate prices, because it's a bilateral. The mine has weighed everything and said that rather than rely exclusively on the grid power, let me have someone here for a generator for me locally. And they agree with the price, and that price doesn't really affect the customer down there. Whereas if it was a municipality, we would be concerned. In fact, we do get concerned when small units come to us and say that, you know, there are these renewable energy IPPs that want to sell to us. They ask for how much, and they talk to us about 125 for wind and all that, and they get concerned because what they should be buying at is 41 cents from ESCO, not 125 from this IPP. So we get very, very concerned about that if it's a small municipality, or especially. So selling straight to ESCO is quite good, and LPUs, large power users, their bilaterals, they don't affect us around in this room, because really, it will be very indirect, remember. It won't be very direct. It will be very indirect. That is that if one is supplying to Anglo, and Anglo has agreed to the price, that is okay. That's how we look at it. We believe that Medupi is happy nature, because the loan that they wanted from the World Bank, they got that loan, dependent on the fact that they will be having the wind and the CSP. So we take it that that project is going, we haven't had anything different. So we still believe that Medupi is going on. And about CSP in Upington, we don't know much about that, what is going on there. Because we wait for people when they're ready to come to us with applications that now we're ready to generate. And then that's where we start getting involved.
Chair, thank you very much. The issue around the regulations and the selection criteria, the consultation processes, Honorable Sinclair, I can assure you that we are very optimistic that in terms of the processes that are underway, we are getting there. Obviously, this is a hump that we have to go through because this is the first for the country. And our consultation with the Department of Energy and National Treasury is necessary because these are very important players in this business. Department of Energy being a policy department, National Treasury dealing with issues relating to IPPs at the end of the day. It is very important that in the selection criteria that there should be this consultation. In the contrary, there's no regulation at all in the entry of this renewable energy business. I don't think it will be over-regulation. In fact, the interest shown by potential investors it's very, very high. And the weighted average cost of capital in this project, to say, I can assure you, it's very attractive that investors who can even beat the prices that we're putting up elsewhere in Spain, in China, and elsewhere in the world in terms of the prices we have put. They look at this as being very attractive. I think the issue of IPPs, and we've
I'm not going to try to go back to what Mr. Metezo is saying. You see, the beauty about the economies of scale that Eskom has got a fleet that really produces electricity at, say, 10 cents per kilowatt hour to the one that Majuba that produces at a very high, maybe 30 cents per kilo. So if you blend that, it becomes relatively reasonable in terms of your average cost. So, and if any one of us today were to build an IPP, you'd probably come at not less than 90 cents per kilowatt hour, depending on what primary energy you're using, and what whether you'd be a base load or whether you'd be a mid merit or you'd be just for peaking. So this is the point that we are trying to make. And the point of whether at a lower voltage you can sell into the system, yes, you can. But here we were talking in greater scheme of things. If you look at when we experienced the power shortage, one of the problems that Eskom was running is MPPP. Triple P, the medium term power purchase program. What we were doing there, we were encouraging those private companies that have excess generation capacity to sell back into the system. So this is the program that we're running, and we're also licensing in various stages. So it is possible. The reason that we're answering in the manner we're doing is because we're talking in a bigger scheme of things of power generation, as I was showing it on the slide there. I think
the question you asked, but we don't want to answer that question. I think what you're talking about is individuals now, say having PVs on their roofs and trying to sell to the municipalities. Well, there are many regulatory issues that come in when it comes to that. For one thing, what power, what capacity will you be selling? Will it be like we don't want to talk megawatts here. Maybe you're talking like 50 kilowatts, 100 kilowatts. Then the question arises, do we as NERSA have to license you or register you? Maybe you'll say, no, I mean it's like 100 kilowatts or 200 kilowatts, so why license, why bother? The problem is that if you're going to sell to the grid, you're going to be connected to the grid. So there is a possibility that you can create some problems for the grid because the quality of your supply, your inverter might have been bought in some cheap place and it causes problems for the grid. And as a regulator again, once we have not licensed you, we have a problem because we have to look after the quality of supply. So now if you cause problems for the grid, then we'll have a problem. Because now you've been affecting our customers and affecting the country's grid. So there are those questions that now we have to answer. Do we have to license you when you're just selling at 100 kilowatts or 200 kilowatts? Maybe you'll say, no, you don't have to license, but I'm saying to you, there's a risk in that for the country and for the grid, the local municipality. So we need to look at those things. And with PV has introduced, once we came up with this, suddenly people came out and said, no, why don't you license us? And also there are issues with the metering now. You have to have reverse metering, right? And will you want to get to be paid at refit prices, or will you just have to reverse your metering so that's how you pay the minute? You get the net after the month. I don't know how you do it. So there are issues that we still have to deal with that are regulatory in nature. Because really, ourselves, I don't believe that we'd be happy to have to regulate people at that level, you know. But then there's this question of the quality of supply. How do we make sure that you don't cause problems for the network because of the inverter that has been bought from some country that is, you know. So the other things that we're looking at. So we have not come as a regulator to a conclusion. Because when you come to Griffith, we are saying we started 1 megawatt upwards. Right. So we don't have anything below 1 megawatt. So we cannot say to you, we will license you at 500 kVA or 20 kVA. We are not there yet. I think we still have to talk about that with our fellows with the department to see where the cutoff point should be. And if we have to license, or people like you at 20 or 50 kVA should be allowed to sell to the power municipality, we'll have to talk about that later on. But right now we're not there. We're still starting at 1 megawatt with these refits we talk about here today.
Are you done answering?
No. We're done.
We in terms of answering the question, especially Honorable Sinclair's question, he's very ahead of us. Issues of, there are very serious regulatory issues for certain levels of energy to be sold back into the system. I think Honorable Sinclair is very ahead of us. Yeah, it's okay in other jurisdictions in Europe, it's done. But for, we're not there yet. We're still talking about medium to large scale production into the system, as he indicated, above certain threshold. We will ultimately get there, hopefully.
Honorable Lees.
Mr. Chairman, now I will concur with Honorable Sinclair that this sounds like the next millennium here.
All right. Well, I'll come back up for more questions. Honorable Sinclair, you look amazed and puzzled. Do you want to... Honorable Sinclair, Honorable Van Lingen, you want to ask a question? But you just spoke now, so I'm giving you the opportunity. You don't want to. Any more other hands? Okay, Honorable Sinclair.
It seems that there's a bolt in the generator once again here. Now, fortunately, the people that were involved with the bolt and so on is no longer part of the system. I think the bottom line in this whole debate is twofold. Is the issue that Honorable Gamede raised in terms of the price of electricity for the ordinary citizen of this country. And it seems that, once again, the noble objective of alternate energy and the IPPs is going to take a very, very long time because the reality will filter through to the rank and file. The issue, once again, from a Northern Cape perspective, is the issue about affordability for the farmers and so on. And you would know that there's a big debate in the agricultural sector regarding the cost of electricity and the productivity and so on. The point or the question that I want to raise, is there, given the fact that sometimes it seems when it flips government there's a special regime for aluminium smelters and so on and so forth, is there a process of special negotiations with the agricultural sector in terms of providing a special tariff for farmers and the agricultural sector in South Africa to make it profitable and for them to survive?
Okay. I've recently, it has come to the attention recently that some of the big mining companies wants to establish their own IPPs. But also, not just for the mine operation, but also to sell those energy at a reduced price to the communities around it and businesses around that mining operation. I'm not sure whether you are aware of it. I think one of the companies was Anglo American. Wants to do it after Limpopo. There was an article also in Mining Weekly about that, which some of the companies wants to do that.
So, but if NERSA are aware of it, how are they going to regulate that power or energy from these IPPs that wants to sell it to the communities and to the mining communities and businesses around it, farmers around the mining areas and all that? Is it going to be the same scale as you have shown us here, or will there be a different scale towards that?
Thank you very much, Chair.
Chair, with regard to a special dispensation regarding the farming community, you would recall, Chair, that
at the beginning of the year when we were working on the MYPD processes, conducting public hearings in the nine provinces, we have listened to everybody, including the farming community, and they did bring this issue quite loud and clear to us, and we listened carefully. We are a creature of statute, and we're an administrative body. We can only do what is in the legislation. What Honorable Sinclair has raised, we normally channel it to the relevant ministers. In this particular case, we did speak to all the ministers that are relevant, starting from public enterprises, trade and industry, the Reserve Bank Governor, National Treasury, and DOE. So this is purely a policy matter that we think it can be taken at that level. But we interrogated these assertions or proposals by farming community. It became clear to us that as an input cost, the electricity cost is relatively small compared to other costs such as diesel and so on. So having said what I'm saying, that this is a policy matter, but in terms of as a percentage of an input cost, it constitutes a relatively small portion. But certainly, I'm sure the relevant policy department that issue. Issues of negotiated pricing agreements that were entered some time ago during the you know, the reserve margin luxury, if I may put it that way. If you recall, I mean, we had a surplus reserve margin, which we never used, to an extent that ESCOM would enter into these negotiated agreements, which were linked to the exchange rate, which were linked to commodity prices. And during the boom of that commodity prices, let's be honest, as South Africans, we benefited. Because really, there were windfall gains by ESCOM when the aluminium prices were shooting right through the roof. And now, the opposite is happening. Now we want ESCOM to get out of it. Of course, ESCOM is renegotiating them. But this, once again, these are negotiated pricing agreements, which we as a regulator are privy to, but these are confidential in between ESCOM and the entity. In this particular case, the smelters. But yeah, we somehow, as a country, to during the boom of this, we benefited with an excessive reserve margin, and the prices of aluminium and the exchange rate favored us, and the price of electricity at that time was relatively low. I think in terms of on generation, Chair, on generation has always been there. I mean, if you look at Sagini Secunda, for instance, I mean, Sasol does do its own generation. We license that those generation plants, and they are a distributor as well in some parts to distribute into the township. So, but they are regulated in the same manner that we regulate ESCOM plants. Many mines have got their own standalone generators because you know,
just like we have during the FIFA World Cup, that you had three types of supplies. You had a supply that is coming from just the generators that were just supplying, communication, because the communication was there. Cash cow, is there cash cow? Can you imagine that if dimming throughout the world and then you lose signal, then you have a problem? And there are places like the pitch which have level 2, and then of course there's level 3. Even in the mine is like that. Even in buildings, that's what we have. You cannot have your lifts being powered to the same system. You want when the building fails, at least you can still be able to pull people out if you're hoisting people underground. So there are those levels of categorizing. So mines, many mines do have their own generation capacity to an extent that they can always run it every month. Now, that is why there was this program I talked about, the medium-term power purchase agreement, that those mines that do not use those generators anymore can make them available when requested by Eskom during when the system is becoming critical. So, Chair, yes, and now that the prices are becoming more and more attractive for developers, we will see more of that coming, including cogeneration, because more and more, when the prices are getting higher and higher, becoming to a marginal cost of production, because at the moment, the prices do not correctly reflect the cost of production. Because most of our fleet is amortized. So, but once we bring in these other big stations like Bikusil and so on, the prices will begin to gravitate towards the long-run marginal cost of production. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, we've got SAUGA also present in terms of the constitution. SAUGA is also part of the National Council of Provinces. They've got 10 seats there. They can participate in anything except vote. So if SAUGA wants to pose a question, it's fine. Okay, all right. Honourable members, are there any more questions? Are you satisfied? You're not satisfied. Now, what is the problem? Honourable Sinclair, talk to us. You've got the platform. This is your platform. Yes, Nersa. Don't say outside of this room when the Nersa is not here to answer you that you are not satisfied. Yes, Nersa, yeah? What is the problem? That's here. Honourable Sinclair?
No, the reality is that in theory everything seems fine, but in practicalities, the objectives that's been put there by government and by the executive is not going to materialize. That is the reality. And who's going to suffer at the end of the day? It's not going to be Eskom. Not going to be whoever. It's going to be the people that need the electricity, the farmers, the mines, the ordinary people out there. And I just got a feeling that because once again government is dragging its feet, I mean, it's what there, selection criteria, relook at that, there's a policy change and so on. It's going to take much longer to use this very, very nice opportunity. And that's the concern. And I don't know of anybody of the members, including all the parties, that can be satisfied with that.
Are there any other members that's not satisfied? Okay, seems everybody's satisfied. See, I don't know if you want to respond to that, or Chairperson, but I think we should get the relevant department that is responsible, like Department of Energy. We should get them. Nothing stops us from getting them an answer. Give answers to the question that you posed. Because I think that NERSA, they are under the auspices of energy, they're an entity of energy. So whether we get NERSA and energy together in one room, we will have to do that. Does that make you happy, Honorable Sinclair? Because then you can engage with the executive, you get the minister, the responsible person, the executive, you get the minister, you get the DG, you get the chairperson of NERSA. She has promised she will come and she has honored the promise. The CEO will get them there. Not a problem. I don't foresee any problem in that. Do you foresee a problem? Are you happy?
No, I'm not happy, but I think all of us as representatives of the people can only rest once we've got cheaper and more reliable energy in South Africa. That is the underlying argument in this whole story. And what we've heard here today is that it's still going to take years, maybe not even in our lifetime, that we will get to the 30% of the government objective. Only then we can be happy, Chairperson.
Well, I haven't heard that you said that it will take 30 to 20 years. It could be 1 year, it could be 6 months. So now you're putting words in other people's mouths. Honorable Sinclair. Be careful. Because I haven't heard that. But be that as it may, we'll get all the relevant role players together and we'll sort out. Honorable Lees?
Mr. Chairman, Honorable Sinclair and I agree in many things, but the one thing he's leaving out of his general analysis is the question of increasing the generation from renewables at small scale level, the point that I've labored at length here. And that seems to me something which is a long way off. And I don't really understand why. I hear the question, the statement of the quality of the power generated by my little plant, but that can be controlled by the buyer. If I want to go and buy a motor car, and I have certain standards, and I'll probably go and buy a VW Viva because my standards are quite low, but perhaps you'll go out and buy that Mercedes 3 Series 300 or something. You know, we try to regulate something which really doesn't need regulation, in my opinion. I mean, if you put a meter onto the current plug point there, you'll probably see that 50 cycles per second does fluctuate a little bit, and that will affect the equipment that's captured, and that's Eskom power, and Eskom, you watch the lights all dim every now and again, so their quality is not always up to scratch either. But they can, you let them carry on in license. So that I agree, the question of the supply of electricity at the cheapest possible rate as enumerated by Donald Sinclair. But I really think that there are lost opportunities if we don't really speedily look at the cutoff level for licensing. And I think it should be a free-for-all below a certain level. And let the seller and the buyer negotiate directly. And I think that's an opportunity which is going to be lost if it's not addressed soon, Mr. Chairman.
Gio?
Just a few closing remarks before my chair concludes. I think, Chair, thank you very much for putting the record straight that we do not believe that it will take as long as it is suggested that we will get a critical mass of independent power producers. I think the processes that are in place are showing the direction that we're getting there. And then secondly, Chair, as you rightly said, you know, we are answerable to government in the work we do to an extent that a thorough consultation, not only with the relevant government departments, but with the public in general, we have to undergo those processes. So the consultation that we are doing currently with the Department of Energy and National Treasury are necessary so that when the project gets kick-started in the right direction. Thirdly, Chair, all what we are doing, we learn from other countries that have successfully implemented the renewable energy technologies in power generation. And without fail, all of them have started with one criteria
at least that of economies of scale. And the size, yes, we'll go to small scale production of renewables, but I think we need to start somewhere. We're not there yet, and because it's done elsewhere in other parts of the country. And finally, Chair, the same way we did with the some members of the Portfolio Committee on Energy members, you're welcome to visit us and to see how we do our work. If there are any other questions that are still outstanding in your individual capacity, we'll be glad to host you and speak to our analysts and get the insight of what it is that we do into making sure that we do meet the targets of bringing in renewable energy technologies in power generation. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, what remains for me to do is to thank you for inviting us and thank all the members, honourable members, for the engagement. We welcome this and the rigour. We also welcome the rigour because it's only when we are challenged that we can go and seek more answers. We definitely are engaging DOE on a daily basis, and some of the stuff you've given us, we will go back and ask the questions.
Thank you, CEO and Chairperson of NERSA. Also to the members of the committee. As we say, as I've said to you from the start, that we can be very rigorous and robust debate. We believe in that, but we also believe that in fairness. I want to express or to accept the invitation to go and visit NERSA. We will do that as part of our oversight work. I think we haven't been out to some of the entities, so we will definitely do as part of our oversight duty to some of the entities. I hope that when we get there, then you will assign some scientists to answer the members' questions and engage with the members in that. We want to say thank you for coming, and this is not the first and the last time. We will still call you many, many more times, so on your way forward, we want to wish you all of the best and hope that you can, as the Honourable Sinclair says, regulate the industry and fix the pricing so that the poor will benefit and the rural areas. Honourable Fundingen? That the poor will benefit from that. And that, as Honourable Sinclair said, that it's not in the next millennium, but it will happen very shortly. With that words, we want to invite you also to lunch at the old assembly, dining hall starting at 12:30. So if you have not got a plane to catch right away, let's not be tomorrow in the newspapers being criticized by wasteful expenditure. Focus expenditure. As you rightly have, we've got an accountant and he calculates everything in our list. Honourable members, that leaves us with about half an hour, and at 2 we've got the IDC. You are also invited to lunch at the Old Assembly Chamber. That's not to soften you up. We will be robust with you as well, as we are robust with everybody that appears before the committee. Can the members of the committee just stay behind? There's just one item that we need to discuss in the committee. We want to say to the media also, thank you very much. I think you are also invited for lunch.
Chairman, I just want to create an implication of what you're saying. I found the answers from the team from NERSA very scientific. It wasn't an implication that we need scientists to give us better answers.
That's good, Honorable.